I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE on its National Day, celebrating when the UAE ceased being a British crucial state colony. This year, like last year, National Day in an Arab state is impacted by the horror of Arab brothers and sisters being slaughtered by the UK-US EU armed war on Palestine. The so-called International Caucasian Court in Holland has an annual meeting today after its arguably pointless ICC arrest warrant against Israeli leader Netanyahu. This is US weapons and cash are poured into Israel by genocide Joe Holocaust Harris and the people really running the world's hegemonic power ahead of Trump's inauguration in January. Most Americans do not support genocide, and they do not support the proxy war on Russia through Ukraine. And it wasn't just Donald Trump running on a platform of more peace, less war. Joining me now from Detroit is 2024 U.S. presidential candidate Joe Kishore, National Secretary of the Socialist Equality Party. Joe, thanks so much for coming on. You know, today is 70 years to the day the Senate voted to censure Joe McCarthy for his anti-communist witch hunt. What did you learn from your run for the presidency this year? And is McCarthyism alive and well in the United States?
Well, first of all, hello, Afshin. Thanks for having me. The Socialist Equality Party, as you indicated, we ran in the presidential elections against both the Democrats and the Republicans. I would say that there is, in the working class, among young people in the United States, enormous opposition to the escalating global war, to the genocide in Gaza, to extreme levels of social inequality, and to both parties of the capitalist ruling elite, the Democrats and the Republicans. And there is broad interest in and support for an alternative to capitalism, which is socialism. In terms of the ruling class, McCarthyism or anti-communism, anti-socialism is, of course, very present. The capitalist oligarchs see their main enemy, Trump refers to the enemy within, as the working class. And their greatest concern is that the working class and the growth of the class struggle will connect with a program and a perspective that articulates its real interests. In our view, that is socialism, international socialism. And there is broad support for that. There is deep social anger, opposition in the working class.
What's the scale of poverty? Just remind us, and I'm sure on the campaign trail you talked about it a lot, just for our international audience, what is the scale of deprivation and poverty in your country?
Well, the levels of social inequality are enormous. In the United States, the billionaires now control $6.2 trillion in wealth. The top 10% own more than 90% of the wealth, the bottom half next to nothing. In fact, a large percentage, I think 40% of the population has a negative net worth. The conditions of social deprivation, poverty, homelessness. Workers are confronting the impact of soaring prices, basic necessities, housing, food. It is conditions of broad social impoverishment.
Yeah, I think I seem to remember a doctor in the 90s interviewed in Los Angeles saying that they hadn't seen anything like it since the developing world and famine in Africa, except that in Africa there was hope, whereas the poor in the United States, they have the levels of poverty without the hope. Is that connected to how the working classes moved towards voting for Donald Trump this time around? I mean, clearly they didn't want Harris in power.
Yeah, well, the Democrats are broadly and justifiably hated and opposed in the working class. You know, I mean, in terms of what happened in the election, the main change in the vote was the fall in the vote for the Democratic Party. Trump's vote remained largely the same, but one had a significant swing as a result of the fall in the vote for the Democratic Party. And Trump is able to, or was able to, capitalize on social anger, a sort of incoherent, I wouldn't say hopelessness, I would say anger in the working class. And Trump is able to capitalize on that. He and his government is a government of the oligarchs, which is going to wage war on the working class, but under conditions in which there isn't within the political system any actual articulation of the interests of the vast majority of the population, then Trump is able to exploit that. But there is enormous anger and opposition and a desire to fight. I mean, actually, one of the experiences over the past year has been the emergence of working class struggle, very significant strikes, the strike of the Boeing workers, for example, on the West Coast, 35,000 workers. There's been a whole series of struggles in which workers are trying to fight for their interests, but it's constrained by the trade union apparatus, and it finds no reflection within the framework of the whole political system.
And while Biden posed on your corporate media system as being a friend of unions, he enacted legislation against the national rail strike in the United States. You expect more of the same or even worse under Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, people who want to destroy what's left of your unionized working classes?
Well, I think it's important to distinguish between the trade union apparatus and the workers in the unions, because Biden was an ally of the trade union apparatus and used the apparatus to suppress the class struggle, to isolate, contain opposition. He referred to the AFL-CIO as his domestic NATO, meaning that he saw with the union apparatus a mechanism for disciplining the working class behind war. As you said, when workers sought to rebel against the union apparatus, they used more direct measures like the illegalization of the rail strike and the imposition of a contract, which had been voted down by the workers. In terms of Trump, it will be a vicious assault on the working class. Actually, the labor secretary that they have proposed is an ally of the trade union apparatus, has been hailed by the AFL-CIO leaders, by people like Sean O'Brien, the head of the Teamsters, because they see the pick as an indication that Trump wants to work with the apparatus. But that's very different from any support for the working class.
You might have to give us just a touch of history there, because the AFL-CIO, you know, around the world, there are different union meetings. There's an international union movement of this kind. How infiltrated is it by the CIA and by U.S. intelligence operations to destroy workers' movements all around the world?
Well, I used to refer to the, perhaps it's still appropriate, the AFL-CIA, that the trade union apparatus has been instrumental in undermining genuinely left-wing political movements throughout the world. And here in the United States, it plays a similar role in seeking to block the development of rank and file opposition. You've had actually repeatedly a situation where workers reject a contract brought back by the union apparatus one, twice, three times, even four times before it's final. That happened with Dakota workers, auto workers in Chicago this past year. The union apparatus is an instrument for suppressing opposition in the working class. And of course, for the most part, they backed Biden. Actually, I talked to auto workers in the Detroit area who said that Sean Fain, the president of the UAW, for Harris, of course, first Biden and then Harris, that their support for Harris actually contributed to Trump's vote, because the union apparatus is so hated, Fain is so hated among auto workers, that when he was going around campaigning for Harris, that encouraged workers actually to vote against her.
So J.D. Vance, of course, who was celebrated in a movie about the poverty of Appalachia in his upbringing, you see him as also a wolf in sheep's clothing as regards using ideas of working class advancement into neoliberal privatization themes?
He's just a demagogue. And I mean, he's really close to the Silicon Valley oligarchs, people like Peter Thiel, the former head of PayPal, who, you know, want to dismantle everything, all social programs, the elimination of all corporate regulations, the all limited protections that workers have. They are going, as you referenced, Elon Musk. You know, they have a plan for cutting $2 trillion in spending, which can't be done without a massive assault on Social Security healthcare, Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, all of the composition of the Trump cabinet is a cabinet of, by, and for the oligarchs.
I mean, clearly, with Marco Rubio at Secretary of State, any war on Central America and Latin America will create more refugees to the north. But how are all these oligarchs going to employ people, enough people, in their factories if the border doesn't allow more immigration? Apparently, you know, most studies show the United States is desperate for new immigrants to be able to supply labor. How are they going to cope with less immigration into the United States under a Trump presidency?
Well, through an immense increase in exploitation, although I think that the main significance of the assault on immigrant workers, first of all, they're creating conditions of basically desperation, fear, in which immigrant workers have absolutely no rights, are perpetually at fear of deportation, and therefore ripe for extreme corporate exploitation. But the assault on immigrants is also part of the establishment of essentially a police state regime. Trump has spoken about the deployment of the military to utilize to create basically concentration camps and organize mass deportations. But these measures will be used not only against immigrant workers, but against all opposition within the United States, and particularly from the working class. And it is a strategic question for American workers to come to the defense of immigrant workers, to unite the working class in the United States as part of a fight to unite the working class all over the world, because we all have the same interests against these corporate financial oligarchs.
Of course, there are honorable exceptions to the AFL-CIO style of basically military-industrial complex unionized elements. Do you see spots of hope across the United States where workers are organizing very much in a different way to that endorsed by Trump and Harris?
Well, the Socialist Equality Party, and this was a major element of our campaign and our political work coming out of the election, is the fight for rank-and-file power, rank-and-file committees, the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees. And there's a response. In the UAW elections a couple of years ago now, a candidate we backed, Will Lehman, ran on a program of abolishing the apparatus, transferring power to the rank and file, and carrying out a real fight against the corporations, uniting the working class internationally, connecting the interests of the working class in the United States with interests of workers all over the world, and with a fight against war. He won very broad support under conditions in which actually many workers didn't even know there was an election taking place, because the apparatus was doing everything it could to prevent workers from understanding. But that's an indication of the response that a real struggle will get in the working class if it's able to, and it must, break free from the control of a highly privileged layer that controls the apparatus.
Joe Kishore, I'll stop you there. More from the 2024 U.S. Socialist Equality Party presidential candidate after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the 2024 U.S. Socialist Equality Party presidential candidate, Joe Kishore. Joe, we were talking about how terrible it might be under Trump and how little difference it might make. Obviously, concentrating the minds of people in this region is the Gaza genocide, which you've alluded to. Do you expect, given that we've had more announcements from the Biden-Harris regime to send more U.S. public money and weaponry to Israel, that all 2 million will be exterminated in Gaza even before the 20th of January?
Well, there has to be a fight. I mean, I don't have predictions on you know, exactly how the numbers involved, but they are escalating the genocide. And it is a bipartisan, absolute bipartisan policy. The Democrats and Republicans are united in their support for the fascistic regime in Israel, which is carrying this out, a criminal regime indicted by the International Criminal Court. But they back it. Trump's appointment for U.S. or U.N. ambassador to Israel is Mike Huckabee, who's made statements about exterminating essentially the Palestinians This is a united bipartisan imperialist policy.
And do the working classes of the United States care, or do they want the defense jobs for the making of more military shells?
There's enormous opposition to the genocide. We found that of course, in the election campaign. One of the key issues that we stressed, however, was that the genocide had to be understood as part of an escalating global war, including the US-NATO war against Russia and Ukraine, which is itself escalating, the preparations for war against China. This is a developing global imperialist war, and it will be continued under a Trump administration. And it threatens all of mankind. It is really an existential question. There is opposition to the war in the United States, as there is in all of the imperialist countries. But that, again, finds no expression in the political system. The Democratic Party is responsible for the genocide. Its central focus throughout the whole Biden administration was the escalation of the war against Russia. And the Republican Party is committed to war as well. And a Trump administration will escalate the war. And the question of opposing war and opposing the genocide, and I think this comes out of the experience of the mass protests over the past year, it is not through appeals to the state apparatus, the various figures within it, but through the mobilization of the working class in every country against its own capitalist governments. The fight to unify the working class, to oppose imperialist war through socialist revolution. And that really does come out of the experience of the genocide. If anything, demonstrates the necessity for a revolutionary struggle against this corrupt criminal ruling class. It's the horrors in Gaza.
In fairness, the whole world is already against you, the European Union and Britain, obviously because of the genocide. But I don't expect a 2024 Socialist Equality Party presidential candidate to endorse Trump. Having said that, do you not think that given some of the appointments, Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr., that at least nuclear Armageddon, imminent nuclear Armageddon, which we might have faced under Holocaust Harris, may have been averted because there may be negotiations of some sort on the horizon over the war in Europe, Western Europe?
Again, I don't, you know, in terms of exact predictions on how this will develop, there are conflicts within the ruling class over foreign policy. Although I think some of the statements, particularly by Trump's recent appointment for National Security Council, Michael Waltz, indicate that, in fact, they see a continuity with the Biden administration and the war in Europe.
He said hand in glove with Jake Sullivan.
Hand in glove with Jake Sullivan, right. This is imperialist policy. It is the policy of the American ruling class. And to the extent there have been differences over the war in Ukraine, it's because the Republican Party, Trump, has focused more on the question of a developing war against China, which of course will be catastrophic. So I don't think it's a question of, you know, having wishes that a Trump administration will somehow lessen the danger of nuclear war. I mean, it is the policy of American imperialism, and it has to be opposed for the fight against imperialism.
But at least there's a tension between oligarch power requiring trade with the most successful economy on earth by PPP, China, and the United States versus war with China. Isn't there that tension, and will we not be living through that tension? Whereas under a Biden administration or a Harris administration, it would have been just war on China.
The tension between dependence on global economy and the conflict actually is at the root of war. It's what's driving the war. The United States, American capitalism is itself immensely dependent upon a world economy, including the resources of Russia and China, other countries. And it's actually that which is the driving force for control. The ruling elites seek control over the world and its resources. And it's rooted in the capitalist system. As a great Marxist explained, Lenin, Trotsky, the imperialist war is rooted in the conflict between world economy and a nation state system. And that's at the root of war, and that's that's what has to be opposed to oppose war.
Now, I know whilst the Socialist Equality Party would wish for the working classes to unite, as it were, in unison, Others are looking to BRICS and other power blocs in the Gramscian vein to at least fight off imminent Armageddon by fighting the hegemonic power of the United States. What hopes do you have that BRICS can help to avert Armageddon?
Well, as Trotsky once said, we follow not the map of war, but the map of the class struggle. That is, our orientation is not to one or another capitalist government, whether it's in Brazil.
And this is the central debate within the left, albeit that in if you read the corporate media, you'd think the debate was between that and LGBTQ rights. Is there a change thought there amongst... I don't know whether it's expanding left in the United States amongst the working classes. Certainly there's much more online suggesting there is a burgeoning working class unity that there wasn't before, about the fact that BRICS and other elements can help the working classes of the United States within the United States.
I don't see that as sort of something which is developing here. I mean, I think the basic point, though, is that the working class of every country has the same interests, and that includes the workers of Brazil, Russia, India, China. We all have the same interests, and those interests are opposed to the capitalist governments that control all of these countries. And as for, you know, the BRICS powers, they're constantly seeking an agreement with imperialism. Whatever differences they have, their appeal is always somehow that they can reach some sort of accommodation with the imperialist powers, and are constantly finding that they can't, because imperialism seeks not an agreement but domination. But the response isn't somehow that these capitalist powers, which are all reactionary, deeply hostile to the interests of the workers in their own countries, that they are not a force for progressive transformation or opposing imperialism. It is the working class. And the workers are united. They're united in the process of production. We have the same interests. We produce the same goods. We are exploited by the same corporations all over the world. The issue is making that objective unity conscious in a political movement. And that's not by subordinating the working class to any capitalist government.
Obviously, some governments would beg to differ that run state institutions, and certainly the Chinese government would beg to differ. I mean, suppose in your hemisphere most imminently, how prepared are Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba for invasion under a Trump administration if indeed Marco Rubio gets his way as Secretary of State? Are these countries prepared for what the United States is going to unleash south of the Rio Grande?
Well, I'm not sure if anyone is prepared for that. But yes, certainly Trump is talking about trade war against China, against Canada, Mexico. Certainly the appointment of Rubio indicates that they will pursue a major escalation of the offensive in Latin America, Venezuela in particular. But again, it is also in continuity with the policy of the Biden administration and American imperialism as a whole, which again underscores, I mean, the imperative of fighting for the unity of workers in the United States with workers in Latin America, South America, North in Canada, the fight to unify the North American and South American working class against this rapacious government is going to develop as a central strategic issue.
Well, as I said, anti-colonial struggle alive and well in West Africa, all sorts of BRICS-oriented developments in the rest of the world. How will the working classes react, do you think, to the Trump policies from January the 20th? Are they going to end up in despair as they're further impoverished, or will they be able to organize?
I think there's going to be a real struggle and a fight. You know, the American working class is not in a state of demoralization and defeat. That's not what's happening. It has many illusions and lack of understanding, but the policies that this oligarchic government will pursue, the escalating war, this is going to engender opposition. This is not a period of coming of as a demoralization. This is a period of struggle. And the workers are going to fight. They're going to fight in the United States and all over the world. But the issue is one of what is the perspective? What is the program? And in our view, that is a fight to reestablish and reconnect the working class with the real history of the socialist movement, which is the Trotskyist movement, the history of the fight for revolutionary internationalism, opposition to capitalism and all its agencies, and to develop a real understanding. That is the issue, capitalism, a social and economic system that is based upon profit, the exploitation of the working class for the interests of the oligarchs. It is a global system. And that is the source of all of our problems. World war, fascism, dictatorship, climate change, an ongoing pandemic, one might add, exploitation, inequality. Its root is in the capitalist system.
No, well, you don't have to be a fan of Trotsky necessarily to agree with you. And in fact, some of those arguments are made by dare I say it, Stalinists and even reformers in Doge, the Elon Musk system. At least, do you think that a Trump administration will give the ability to network and communicate between elements of the working classes in the sense that there'll be less censorship of the kind that we've seen under the Biden-Harris regime and some element of being able to communicate between different states, between different factories, between different working class centers of power?
Well, there certainly will be the opportunity to do that, and we will fight for that. But it's not going to come from anything that the Trump administration does. I think, you know, this is not going to be a government committed to free speech. You know, Elon Musk, the world's wealthiest man, is at the center of it, and he's turning Twitter into a platform of right-wing fascism, essentially. I mean,
it's freer than it was.
What's that?
Freer than it was.
Well, you know, these are both parties of censorship. Trump administration is planning on deploying the military, cracking down basic democratic rights under assault. The expansion of democracy, the most basic democratic form, is not coming through this. It'll come in opposition to both of these parties and the capitalist system. I mean, you know, this is the Trump administration is not a government of democratic, expanding democratic rights. On the contrary, it's a government of turns through ever more ruthless forms of dictatorship and suppression.
Joe Kishore, thank you. And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those surviving UK-US-EU armed genocide here in this region. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.